Welcome to the Estimate Mastery Podcast, where we teach contractors how to not leave money behind in Xactimate and get paid what you're worth. Hello, and welcome to episode number 9 of the Estimate Mastery Podcast. I'm here, Alina Wilson, with Todd Beckman. Do you want to say hello to the folks?
Hi, folks.
Very good. And Todd has been on a couple of the other podcasts, but just as a reminder, he's our on-staff Xactware certified trainer. So we're not affiliated with Xactware in any way, but you can, as a trainer, go and get certified by them. So that's his designation that he holds. We're excited to have him here talking all about how to get O&P paid and what's Xactware's stance on O&P. Lots of fun things that we can talk about and speak to when talking about O&P. So to kind of open the discussion, what are some of the objections that contractors normally hear surrounding O&P?
Complexity, for sure. Number of trades, right? And then exterior versus interior is another one. So, if it's just roofing, they don't want to pay any overhead and profit.
Well, let's start off by saying, Xactware has drawn a line in the sand with their O&P white paper. So their overhead and profit white paper is available for anybody to go and download at eservice.xactware.com. If you have never read through that paper, that is a great read. But just to give a summary of it, Todd, can you summarize what that paper says basically for us?
Certainly, yeah. It breaks overhead and profit down. And the profit is the excess of your selling price over the cost of goods. And profit is primarily for growing your company through reinvestment. So unless you have profit, you are not going to grow your company. And if you don't recover overhead, you're going to sink the ship eventually. So there's three types of overhead. The first one would be your general administrative. And that would be for a general contractor. Those costs that you incur to running your business, that's advertising, depreciation on office equipment, your salaries, of course, your heat, electricity, everything in your company to run the office. If you have multiple offices, advertising, all that's in the first type of overhead. And then the second type of overhead is the direct cost of the job. So let's say you needed a porta potty and a job trailer and fencing and all that. Those are direct costs, but they are overhead. However, they need to be seen as necessary for that job, maybe scaffolding, that kind of thing. Then you have the personnel that you've hired, so your employee type of overhead, but that's generally associated with billable tasks. So that's not going to be associated with a general contractor. It will be associated with a general contractor, however, if they use their own employees to do the work. So like you said, the line in the sand is if you sub out your jobs to other trades and other contractors, then you're a general. And Xactware recognizes that. That's why they published the white paper. The funny thing about the insurance industry is that, years prior to, I'd say, the 90s, you could meet, a contractor would meet with the adjuster and they'd agree on terms and the adjuster would write a check right in the field. Now they've gone through this period where they've, listened to the advice of some consulting firms that are all about greed, and they made it such that the less money that you pay out, the more profit that the insurance companies make. So I think in strict terms of overhead, it is recognized by Xactware, now Verisk, of course, but that it is essential for a general contractor to recoup their overhead, because they published right in that same paper that the unit price for any goods or and services in the program have the subcontractor overhead and profit, G&A, in there, but do not have the overhead and profit for a general contractor. And as we can imagine, it varies. I mean, a guy working out of his basement versus a guy that has, three satellite offices in Houston are going to vary in their overhead. And so that's why in the program, they've left two windows available to the contractor, general contractor, one for overhead and one for profit. In fact, I spoke with a CPA today regarding trying to get something together that would be objective and third-party kind of document that would verify the contractor's overhead. And he said that it's there are strict rules regarding that. The fellow that I talked to locally is a CPA, but he's going to refer me to someone else, or he's going to make several calls, which is nice of him, to deal with those individuals CPA-wise that will offer that service. And then I'm going to find out how much it costs, if there's some forms that we could fill out, you know, as contractors to get that kind of going. And that way, when you present your case before either the homeowner or the adjuster, it's third party verifiable and certified through, you know, that entity. And I think that's important, is to be objective, transparent, and always be honest with our customer as well as the adjuster. But by and large, as you know, Alina, 10 and 10 is what they go by. 10 and 10 was probably as a result of the National Association of Home Builders publishing new construction overhead and profit. And I think they published 10 and 9, but somehow this 10 and 10 got in there. It's miserable because new construction, you have nothing in your way. You know, a tradesperson goes in, they go in there, do their job, get out. But what's facing our contractor base is, cars in a parking lot, kids, cats, dogs, time schedules, all those things slow down that labor efficiency so that you incur more overhead as a result.
Yep. And then, like you said, a guy, two chucks in a truck, I can never say that correctly, but you get it, versus, you know, a full staff of admin, project managers, you've got five offices. Those are two totally different overhead situations. And also, I'm wondering, in all of this, where does inflation come in? You know, should we be adding a 9.1% inflation to our job cost? You know, there's lots of things that you can talk about a CPA and what should be added as your overhead. I also want to clarify that your profit does not include your salary. Okay, so owners, for some reason, think that profit, you know, and salary are the same thing. No, your owner's salary should be in your overhead costs. So I just want to clarify that. That's a pet peeve of mine when I start talking to people and they get that conflated. So there's a lot of, you know, throwing a lot of financial terms around here, but it's so important to know that number and have someone substantiate it for you, because your overhead might be 25% and you're only charging 10, right? And if you could substantiate that with the insurance company that, you know, you have this full staff that provides great customer service to your homeowner, you're not some guy working out of the basement, right? That shows, you know, the extra care, and you should be paid for that, because that's, you know, the way overhead and profit works. So that's why I love that O&P white paper from Xactor, because as you said, it draws the line in the sand. Yeah, there is. When the adjuster says, oh, there's overhead and profit line items. Yes, they are for the subcontractor. As soon as you step outside that role and you're the umbrella company and you're coordinating all trades, then you are due the O&P on top of that. I, as a homeowner myself, when I had a water loss, I coordinated all the guys that came and went, and I got paid the O&P on my claim because I did the coordination. That's the line in the sand. And that's what a lot of people don't understand. And it's clearly delineated in that O&P white paper. So go pick up your copy at eservice.exactware.com. Log in with your Xactmate credentials. Go search in the search bar that pops up right there in front of your face. Search overhead, I think, is how you have to search, or O&P. One of those two, and it'll pop up. The PDF will be right there for you. So definitely something you want to take a look at. The second piece to this is the roof pricing white paper, where they talk about overhead and profit. And I don't know, Todd, if you can pull that up and kind of read those two paragraphs from that paper.
Yeah, basically, I've got to kind of memorize it. It states in the past, primarily your tradespeople were responsible by and large for doing their, performing their work, and that you had strictly, like in that paper, roofing contractors, right? Well, now, because of the demand, in fact, roofing is like is a quarter of all the claims paid out in the country is roofing claims. So that paper specifically says that it's for all trades, because if you look at it, they're pinpointing roofing because, you know, roofers traditionally have been negligent and standing up for their rights and overhead and profit. And Xactware has published that paper because, A, you know, there's such a big demand for roofing, especially when storms hit. But B, they're being neglected when it comes to general contractors. So what the paper says is that in the past, it's been primarily subcontractor-based. Now, there's a call for people, general contractors or someone in only a single trade like roofing. And so they are considered general contractors if they do what? If they sub out their work. Well, if you think about subcontracting out work, you now are wearing about three or four different ball caps. A, you have to incur extra liability. And I know when I was a general contractor that I had to check my subcontractor's workers' comp insurance to make sure it didn't expire on the job. And if it did, guess what? I got audited at the end of the year and I'd have to pay for it. So B, you've got coordination of work in the field, which you have to get, you know, satisfactorily done to the homeowner's, you know, satisfaction and coordinate on their hours. Thirdly, you've got to have a sense of the, you know, job quality, the quality control, because you want to make sure they're using the right materials, the right gauges, the right sizes, the right colors, and, you know, on and on. Safety can be brought out as far as, you know, OSHA requires certain standards. And so as a general contractor, you want to ensure that as well. So there's probably five or six things that we could think of that you're actually performing a task that you normally wouldn't do because you have all these people on your job that you're responsible for that are other than your employees, you know, and typically they take the place of your employees. So therefore, it's nice that we do have that white paper. And I don't know if you've noticed, but like when State Farm sends out their first ACV check, you know, the first payment, minus, of course, wear and tear, but it actually shows overhead and profit by a contractor. And they say, you know, well, we'll pay this if it, you know, it meets certain criteria. Well, whose criteria do we go by? Do we go by what makes sense, or we go by your greedy intentions of, you know, not paying out overhead profit where it's due? So that's why I like the paper by Exactwork. And this is a thing about it too, Elena, that most people haven't seen because they haven't come from, you know, decades prior, is that now it's become, you know, their opinion as opposed to fact. And that's where we got to get this straight. Exactware Verisk has published fact. This is the facts about, you know, this is how it's paid out. This is who we owe it to. This is how it's, you know, structured. That's fact. But we have the opinion of some adjuster who, you know, used to work at Dunkin' Donuts the day before, you know, and he doesn't know crud except for what his supervisor tells him. Well, supervisor gets bonuses. CEO gets bonuses based on what? How little they pay out. So I think that, you know, the big hurdle, the primary boulder in a way for us is in getting this paid is that our onboarding process should include the homeowner because they're getting cheated. Yeah, we both get cheated. Contractors and homeowners get cheated because if they don't pay that, it's still owed. And you're running someone's business down the drain when you don't need to. The other thing about it is that when the original house is built, that general contractor did have overhead and profit. Why else did he build a house? And so everybody else in line should have overhead and profit in your structure, unless you're just a single line subcontractor, you know. And if you are, if you're a you know, roofing contractor or whatever, and you're just using your own employees, then that profit is built in there.
Yeah, that's where mitigation, it gets a little dicey because most of those guys are W-2 that they send out as their techs to do, you know, the demo and the water removal. So it's hard, when working with that. Now, going back to the homeowner issue, and this is going to be something, if you are listening to this, lean in closely because it's something I usually just tell members. But the overhead and profit, they are paying that on their premium. So if you can impart that, like Todd said, on your onboarding process and let them know the facts about, hey, you're paying for overhead and profit and you're going to allow this adjuster to pocket that. That's due to you. You're already paying for it. In fact, when they go into underwriting, let's say we had a $200,000 house to oversimplify everything, but just to say $200,000 house, they will, in underwriting, put the 20%, which would be what, 240. They're actually paying a premium on a $240,000 policy, if you will. So if you can impart that to them, they usually get on your side pretty quick. And we have a letter that we've written to that effect that the homeowner sends into the adjuster in nice language. We're not like, you're pocketing my money, but we do, you know, let the homeowner know what the situation is and have them. We do have a form letter that we share with our members over here in our university program. But, you know, that goes a long way once the homeowner gets on board, because that's the whole problem with this whole scenario, right? We as contractors are sticking our nose into as a third party into a two-party contract. The contract between the insurance company and the homeowner, or the policy, if you want to say it that way, we have to go over the homeowner and talk directly to the adjuster. We're sticking our nose into a situation where we don't really have, you know, much clout. So if you get that homeowner on board, they're the lever that's going to move that boulder for you, because they actually, you know, they have the contract with the insurance company by paying their policy. So that's where homeowner involvement is so key in this whole conversation.
Yeah, I think, Alina, it's important to let the homeowner know that there isn't going to be a difference in pricing because you're using the same software as the adjusters are. That is common ground. It's common language that you can speak and say, look, the only differences we may have is in professionalism, in that I am duty bound to follow code and manufacturer specifications.
And standards of care.
Right. Standards of care. That's right. And so if you can delineate that to the homeowner, let them know that the differences aren't going to be you doing a shoddy workmanship and neglecting to do what you're supposed to do in the grand scheme of things. It's going to be probably negligence on the part of the adjuster because he is not a professional. He does not have that trade industry knowledge and standard of care knowledge. And so that's what it's going to come down to. The pricing, why go out and get three bids when you're subjecting your pricing to a third party that the insurance companies have cornered us into using? That's a big thing. That's a huge thing. Yes, I will subject myself to these prices so far as the market is suitable for that price. And, you know, if the market prices go up faster than they publish, well, then I'm going to use the market price, right? But by and large, we've subjected ourselves as contractors to this estimating platform that the insurance companies have cornered us into using. But here's the deal. We're certified in this case for certification. We understand how to use it. They don't.
Yep. So that's just to kind of clarify what Todd's saying. Exactware issues a certification as a user of the software. The rubber stamp, you know what you're doing. 98% of adjusters are not certified to use the software. So when the contractor holds certification, that's the weight that Todd's talking about that you can bring to the table. So that's another discussion. We're actually going to do another podcast on certification. So tune into that. But just the homeowner conversation, the onboarding process, and then how you lead them through the whole, you know, from getting that first check all the way to depreciation. It all matters. How much you know, where the lines are drawn, where you need to push back, and how the homeowner can be on board with you. Any final thoughts there, Todd?
No, I think you've covered it really well. You know, there's different strategies you can employ. And like you said, that's in our membership. We have a lot of those strategies available that help get paid. But I think we covered pretty much every aspect.
Cool. Well, thanks everyone for listening today. We really appreciate you being here. If you have any questions or comments for us, you can always email us at info@estimatemastery.com. Check us out at our website. And then also you can find us on Facebook, TikTok, Instagram, and the YouTubes. So go check us out. Everything we have out there, lots of free training for you. And we look forward to seeing you in the next episode.